Chapter 21. Throughout the night, when diplomats should have been asleep or planning the next day's negotiations, the Jedi and other investigators scoured pertinent areas of the Narsak habitat. Wedge and Tycho confirmed with the frigate Firethorn that a shuttle had departed another habitat at about the same time the assault on the diplomatic envoys was beginning. Hyperdrive equipped, it had headed away from Kuat and her gravity well at a rate that did not elicit suspicion, and it had entered hyperspace before the first alarms were transmitted from the habitat. After the alarm, Toriaz station security had locked the station down, permitting no vehicles or vessels to arrive or depart. The obvious conclusion was that the individual or individuals who'd left via the main spoke to Toriaz station were still there, or had departed on the shuttle. Leia and Mara arranged for security operatives familiar with forensics to be brought in to examine the bodies of the attackers. All had been killed either by trauma from blasters or lightsabers, or through the introduction of a powerful alkaloid poison administered by small injectors in their mouths. Preliminary evidence was that each of them had already been dying from incurable illness as well, and a simple genetics test offered the probability that three-quarters or more of the attackers were Corellian. Wedge and Tycho, accompanied by Luke, acquired a shuttle and a sophisticated set of comm-sensor gear from Lieutenant Yorvin. After an hour's careful flying out from the station, they homed in on the signal being broadcast by Captain Tawaller's comlink. Tawaller, stone dead, victim of explosive decompression, was still in possession of that comlink. They retrieved his body and brought it back to the station, turning it over to the forensics experts dealing with the attackers' bodies. But those experts could report only that Tawaller had died of hemorrhaging and exposure consistent with explosive decompression. There were no wounds on or chemicals present in his body. There were no signs that he had been bound. To all appearances, he had willingly stepped out into space and died a gruesome, painful death. Jason, Ben in tow, wandered throughout the habitat, seeking additional impressions that might point to use of the Force. He found them in the auxiliary security chamber now occupied by Lieutenant Yorvin, and in the airlock where Tawaller had died. In each case, there was a female aspect to the impressions, but Jason could get no clear sense of them. The harder he looked, the more they seemed to blur. Mara and Leia ran a thorough examination of the security auxiliary control room, finding the code modifications that had allowed the shuttle to maneuver into position without being detected by the base sensors. They were able to dig out the true recordings, showing the shuttle's arrival and quick departure. Admiral Pelion kept information flowing from one group of investigators to the next, and, when not so occupied, lost hundreds of credits to Han Solo in a sabacc game. Luke and his investigators assembled in the lounge again at about the hour they would have been waking up. No one looked weary. The Jedi sustained themselves through Force techniques, while Han, Wedge, and Tycho relied on calf and stubbornness. "So what have we learned?" Luke asked. He began counting off on his fingers. "The killers were mostly Corellians, which doesn't mean anything, since anyone can hire Corellian killers." He noticed Wedge's and Han's stares and amended, "That didn't come out the way I intended it." "Forget it," Han said. "This was a sophisticated plan," Luke continued, "at least in its setup. The planner made use of powerful narcotics to subdue the agents on perimeter duty, and a powerful alkaloid to kill assassins who might have otherwise survived. These toxins aren't easy to get. The planner knew exactly where everyone was sleeping, or rather was supposed to be sleeping, since Admiral Pelion and his personnel occupied different chambers without informing the base security detail. Captain Tawaller appears to have been influenced, both into participating in the plan and into killing himself, by means of use of the Force. Meaning that, regretfully, we have to conclude that a rogue Jedi or equivalent is involved. Supporting that point is the fact that the weapons they carried were designed for use against Jedi. Wedge interrupted, much the way the Corellian response to some recent missions was optimized against Jedi. Before Luke could reply, Han cut in. It was Thrakken. That's one possibility, Luke admitted. He couldn't state the thought that next occurred to him, that if Saxon were determined to achieve peace, she might put the secret Corellian fleet on the table as a negotiating item. If Chief Sal Solo were indeed behind the building of that fleet, he would take whatever steps he thought necessary to keep it from being negotiated away. Possibility nothing, Han's voice rose. Does anybody here not know that it was my boy Jason and Luke's boy Ben who wrecked Centerpoint Station? Silence fell in the wake of those words. Luke noticed that Ben seemed upset by the announcement. A look crossed his features. Luke would have described it as haunted. And again, he wondered whether Ben would ever tell the Solos the portion of the story he'd mentioned only during his Jedi debriefing. The details about the droid that had thought it was Anakin Solo. Finally, Wedge said, I've seen the security recordings from the assault on Centerpoint Station. As the one person present least likely to know otherwise, I'd have to say the answer is no. So? Han asked, his face reddening. He wants revenge. The damage at Centerpoint throws his plan back years. But if this assault here last night had been 100% successful, he'd have avenged himself and cleared the way to take complete control in Corellia. He's the only one who profits from what happened here.
Not quite, Leia said. He only profits if he can take control and then achieve peace. The killing of Prime Minister Saxon reduces the likelihood of peace. The Corellians are going to be hopping mad and pushing for war. Thrakken's smart enough to realize how ruinous war would be to the Corellian economy, even if they were to win.
It's Thrakken, Han said.
Jason? Luke leaned toward his nephew. While you were running around chasing Sal Solo as a distraction for Ben, did you get any sense from him that he'd take your actions more personally than an old conspirator should?
Jason thought over the question. In his report, he'd left out the part about him deciding that Thrakken had to die. It appeared that Thrakken had neglected to mention it too, and now Jason thought he understood why. By leaving that part of the story out, Thrakken removed a certain amount of motivation that might associate him with this attack. And now, Jason could admit to his attempt on Thrakken's life, a confession that would further damage Luke's already diminished ability to trust in Jason, or deny it and help obscure Thrakken's association with tonight's misdeeds. Well, it was enough that he, Jason, knew. He could make his own calculations, based on what he knew of Thrakken's motivations. He shook his head. No, I really didn't.
Luke leaned back.
We'll investigate the Thrakken angle, of course. Anything else?
I've got something, Jaina said.
From beneath her outer robe, she produced a folded packet of orange cloth, a bit larger than her fist. She carefully unfolded it, and held it out so that the others could see its contents. At first, Luke couldn't grasp what he was looking at. It seemed to be something organic, the dried, stringy fruit of a mutant tree. It was a pliant thing, with a blue-black central core perhaps a dozen centimeters long. From that core sprang 20 or more tubular branches, narrowest where they were attached to the core and at their tips, only slightly thicker in their centers, each about 6 centimeters long, and each bearing colors, stripes, and other patterns. One, lumpy and knotted, consisted of red and blue stripes in a spiral pattern. Another was straight, an eye-hurting yellow with flecks of red and black. A third was a creamy tan with jittery, jagged markings in black.
We found this in the airlock that T'Waller used when he was going out for fresh air, Jaina said. I haven't had time to scan it for inorganic toxins, but there's no biological activity going on in it. It just seems to be beadwork.
Accidentally dropped or left for us to find? Luke asked. Carried by Tawaller or someone else? Jaina shrugged.
No way to tell.
Excuse me.
The words came from overhead and all around. A set of public address speakers. Luke recognized the voice of Lieutenant Yorvin.
I have a priority holocom contact coming in for Admiral Pelion. He's not in his new quarters. Is there any chance he's still in the lounge?
I'm here,
Pelion said. He heaved himself to his feet, and Tycho stood too.
That'll be the crack of dawn, report any changes call. And as soon as I report, this conference is done.
He sighed.
I'll be back in a few minutes.
He walked stiffly from the room, and the door closed behind him and Tycho. Wedge consulted his chrono.
The Prime Minister will be receiving one of those, too. And though she wouldn't be obliged to receive it, I will be. If you'll excuse me.
He rose and departed as well.
Leaving only Jedi, Zek said, and a Jedi-in-law.
Han scowled at him. Luke stared at the others over his hands, which he held steepled before him in a meditative pose. I think we can safely say that our mission at this station has been an utter failure. We've been outmaneuvered, and we have at least one enemy we didn't know about before. And we know very little about now. In a few minutes, the delegations will be recalled. It'll be time for Jedi investigations to get underway for real. Jason, Ben, please see what you can find out about Captain Tawaller. We need to find out about the Force user he apparently had contact with. She can't have left no trace. If you can't pick up a trail, continue with the shuttle she apparently escaped on. Jason nodded.
Consider it done.
Jaina, Zek, I want you to find out whatever you can about that tassel you found. Try to determine whether it was left accidentally or deliberately, where it came from, what it means. When that's done, please return to the task force at Corellia and take command of Hardpoint Squadron until Mara and I get back from our groundside mission, which I'll explain momentarily. Leia, Han, I'd like to ask you to continue trying to calm things down between Corellia and the GA. I can't think of anybody better to run confidential messages between the two governments, even as they become more hostile, or to tell the leaders of two governments when they're behaving like bantha bulls in roughhousing season. Leia exchanged a glance with her husband.
I suspect we can do that.
Mara and I will travel on to Corellia to see what we can find out about the possible origins of the assault made against us today.
They're after me too, aren't they?
That was Ben, speaking for the first time since the Jedi had reconvened. His expression and voice were somber, not afraid, but far more serious than a 13-year-old should be, and Luke felt a lump begin to form in his throat.
Yes,
he said. If they're after Jason because of Centerpoint Station, they're after you too. Your youth may not mean anything to them, but understand me. Regardless of who they are or how highly they're placed, I'm not going to tolerate the continued... He checked himself before he said existence. Revenge was not the way of the Jedi, not even when one's own son had been the subject of a murder attempt. The continued freedom of people who target children for assassination.
How delicately expressed,
Mara said.
I don't think there's any way they'll refrain from trying to kill us if we confront them, Luke. And when they do...
It's never a good thing to hope for an opportunity to kill, Mara, Luke said, his voice mild. But he had to admit to himself that the exact emotion was there in his own mind, hovering around his areas of self-control like necks circling a campfire just beyond the reach of its light.
All right. Let's go. Ben,
join me and your mother for a few minutes before it's time to leave." Once the Skywalkers were out the door, Jason gestured to get his sister's attention, to keep her from following Zek and the Jedi Exodus.
"Can I see that thing again?"
"Sure."
She held the tassel out to him. Jason looked it over. Close up, the mystery object proved to be an unusual example of beadcraft. It seemed to be a set of decorative tassels, each shaped and colored in an entirely different pattern, each attached to the longer central strand. At the top of the central strand was a cord, blue-black like the strand itself, but unbeaded. It was 3 or 4 centimeters long, and ended in a break, the cord material frayed. The object could have been caught on a corner, or grasped by the hand of a dying man and yanked free with relatively little effort, its loss unnoticed by its owner. Or, Jason acknowledged, it could have been left deliberately. One of the tassels continued to draw his eye, the tan one with the jagged black markings. Tiny black threads escaped through its surface, poking out from between the close-set beads. Viewed from the distance of a meter, they made the tassel look as though it needed a shave, but on closer inspection, they resembled tiny claws. The design of this tassel itself. Jason could almost read the artist's intent.
"The smooth tan represents peace," he told himself. "The jagged black lines, strife. The curled threads are hooks or claws. The moral, even a peaceful life will know strife, and strife presents hooks to drag you farther into the strife, a trap for the unwary." There was more to it than that, he knew, or at least felt. There was some sort of story involved in the message, but he couldn't puzzle it out. Abruptly, he felt foolish. He was a Jedi Knight, not an art critic. It was not for him to try to wrest meaning out of patterns found on some bauble that probably cost less than a credit on a backwater planet street market. But the thing still drew him. He became aware that Jaina was still speaking, her words lost in his distraction. He smiled at her and shook his head.
"Sorry, I was daydreaming."
"That's not like you."
"More like Anakin. Listen, would you like to trade?"
Jaina frowned.
"Trade what?"
"Assignments. I'm feeling something from these tassels. Can you?"
"No, not really."
She stooped to look them over more closely, then shook her head.
"So I should be the one to investigate them. You look into T'Waller, then go and take command of Uncle Luke's squadron."
Jaina briefly considered.
"Let's clear it with Uncle Luke first."
"Let's not. He's been second-guessing a lot of my instincts lately, even though he keeps telling me to trust them. Well, I trust this one. I need to be the one to investigate the tassel."
She gave him a long-suffering look.
"And when he asks about it?"
"It'll be all my fault." She nodded.
"He'll believe that. You are male, after all."
Luke, Mara, and Ben walked along Varganer Way, one level up from and running precisely parallel to Calabarth Way. This passageway had been locked down for the brief duration of the G.A. Corellia diplomatic mission. Now Luke had it opened, temporarily, so he and his family could take a private walk. They paused at a recess dominated by an outer hull wall made up entirely of crystal-clear transparasteel. It showed the same view as the viewport in the solo suite, but even less bounded, and at this moment the Skywalkers could gaze upon a majestic field of stars and the distant sun of Kuat. Finally, Luke said,
"Ben, your thoughts are very close to the surface."
"We should all go there together," the boy said, "to Corellia, us and Jason and Jaina. And we should hammer on Thrakken Sal Solo until he admits what he did, and lock him away so he doesn't do it anymore."
"All together as a family, yes?" Luke asked.
Ben nodded, but didn't look at his father.
He stubbornly kept his attention on a diamond-shaped nebula far away.
"We're all mad because they attacked," Mara said. "But we can't use our Jedi abilities just because we're mad. We can't attack Thrakken under the assumption that he's responsible. We have to have more evidence."
"I know."
Ben sounded resigned.
"If you're mad, you can't let your instincts guide your actions. Because it may not be the Force, it's probably your anger. But we could do it when we're cold inside. Jason's cold inside a lot."
His parents exchanged a quick look. Luke said, "I think what you're feeling as coldness is really submergence into the Force. His own emotions will go away for a while. That can seem cold."
"Whatever," Ben shrugged.
"But we could still do it. We could grab Sal Solo, and we could stop the Corellians from starting a war."
"That's another issue. What if the Force tells you not to beat them, or doesn't tell you anything at all about whether they should win?"
Finally, Ben did look up at him.
"Huh?
Ben, can you honestly tell me that the Corellians shouldn't have freedom from the Galactic Alliance if they want it? Think about the Corellians you know. Uncle Han and Wedge Antilles, for instance. If most of the people in their system want to be independent, why shouldn't they be?"
Ben frowned.
"That doesn't make any sense. They're part of the Galactic Alliance. They can't just leave."
"Why not?"
Mara asked.
"It'll cause unrest. That's what Jason says."
Mara nodded.
"It will cause unrest. There is a lot of unrest in life. The Force is created by life, so it has unrest in it. If you open yourself to the Force, how can you not open yourself to a certain amount of unrest?"
Ben gave his parents a suspicious stare. It wasn't a look of mistrust, just the expression of a teenager anxious not to be tricked.
"Whose side are you really on?"
Luke snorted. "The Jedi Order protects and serves the Galactic Alliance, just as it did the New Republic, just as the Old Order protected and served the Old Republic. But we choose to maintain a certain amount of latitude in interpreting our missions, our orders, for the good of everybody. And that means if we're ordered into battle, but we discover we can achieve a victory through negotiation or a bloodless show of force, we do it. If we discover that we can bring peace by obliging the opposing sides to listen to each other, we do it, even if one side is supposed to be in charge of what we do." Ben returned his attention to the starfield for a moment.
"I hear kids say they hate it when their parents say, 'Do this because I say so.' Sometimes I think they have it easy."
Mara laughed softly and reached out to brush her hand across her son's fine red hair.
"I suspect they do. Of course, they don't get to run all over the galaxy and practice with live lightsabers."
"Yeah, I guess. But thinking is hard, and kind of unfair. There never seems to be a right answer."
Luke felt his lump return, but this time he knew it was caused by pride, not pain.
"That's it," he said. "There never seems to be a right answer is a right answer."
"Oh. Watch out for people who tell you they know the right answer," Mara added. "They may think they do, but often they're wrong. Or they may just know that thinking is so hard, many people don't want to do it. They want a leader they can trust, so they don't have to do the hard work of thinking. That's one type of leader you don't want to follow."
Ben opened his mouth as if to ask another question, then closed it again.
"You're right," Luke said. "If you asked whether you should tell Han and Leia about the Anakin Solo droid, we'd just have to say we don't know."
Ben looked up at him.
"Sometimes you hate being a Jedi, don't you?"
Luke thought about it, then nodded.
"Occasionally."
"Me too."
Within an hour, all members of the three parties had departed, all but Jaina, Zek, Jason, and Ben, who waited behind to begin their investigations from this habitat. They waved at the departing corvettes and transports from the viewport in what had been Han and Leia's suite. When the last of the departing ships was gone, Jason turned to the others.
First, he said, sleep. Then we get underway.